For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm PJ Doran.
I'm Dave Selecki.
This week we have Danny Eslick and Gary Semix on the program, but first want to talk quickly about road racing news from Qatar. Unfortunately, we didn't have the MotoGP class as we discussed last week, but we did have Moto2 and Moto3, and very importantly, the one and only American representative, Californian Joe Roberts, went ahead and set a new track record at Qatar in practice leading up to qualifying. Then he went ahead and qualified with the pole position. He had a great race. He was in the lead group till the final laps, finishing ultimately in fourth place. It was an amazingly good race, again, for the one and only American representative in the road racing series. So we congratulate Joe Roberts on his performance. It was amazing. The race ultimately ended, the Moto2 class, that is, ended with Nagashima winning the race, followed closely by Lorenzo Baldessari and Enea Bastianini. With Joe Roberts in fourth, it looks to be a great season. And now with the off-road news from Daytona, where Pit Pass is, Tony Wink, what's going on in Daytona?
This is the 79th year for the Daytona Bike Week and the 50th running of the Supercross. And so I was down there Saturday. Good day if you're a Kawasaki fan. Garrett Marchbanks took the 250 win for Pro Circuit Monster Kawasaki. And it was kind of a sleeper show, in my opinion. I'm sure they did a better job on TV of hyping it up and the race and stuff. But it was just pretty uneventful in the 250 class to watch. And then in the 450, Elito Mac, we all knew Eli Tomac was going to win this thing. And there's, you know, I think he's one of the winningest. I think he's number That was his number four for Daytona Supercross wins. So that puts him in a pretty elite group of people to have won that many races at Daytona. And you know what? There's no stopping Eli Tomac. When he gets on a tear, he's a beast. And Daytona is 100% right up his alley. Last night we were down in down on Main Street, ran into the HRC mechanics. So Duff was down there, my buddy from Iowa. Justin Brayton's mechanic, Ken Roxon's, Kenny's mechanic was down there, and a bunch of the guys. And we were just kind of talking about how Kenny felt about it. And Kenny was actually pretty stoked on his ride, even though he knew he was going to get ran down. He knew he was going to get passed, which is probably what he did. But what he did afterwards, I thought was pretty impressive. And he was pretty excited about it. He stuck with, you know, he didn't just lay down and take a second place. He stayed with Eli Tomac and did his best to hang with him. And I think that says a lot. Whether Eli Tomac will say it, I think it plays a mental role for Kenny's performance and for the fact that he hung, you know, to Eli, that, you know, he didn't just shut him down. And you know, unfortunately for Kenny, he's 3 points down now, you know, whoever they were tied going into that. But, you know, now we're about halfway through the season. I think there's I would not bet against Kenny Roxon. I think that I really think Kenny is being smart about this series. And, you know, where Eli has some off days, which will put him down, Kenny, if he can stay healthy, I wouldn't bet him against him for the championship. And did you see Kenny is no longer doing autograph signings or dealer shows or anything because he's due to the coronavirus
sign of the times. Yeah. There was a blurb on the internet about the Seattle Supercross might be canceled, and that's coming up, I think in April or
really?
Maybe later this month. But yeah, there's rumors. They've already canceled one of the MXGPs, the Italian round in Liguria. So
obviously Italy's being hit really hard with that over there. A lot of deaths over there, but, and then, like you said, PJ, a lot of the MotoGP guys weren't able to attend, so they just didn't run that class. But it's definitely not hurting the crowd down here. There's a lot of people here. I was wondering how it would be, and it's we pretty much shut Main Street down every night, and there's plenty of people out spreading their germs.
Well, alcohol kills the germs, so well, that should take care of some things.
But I'm not drinking any, so I better get to it.
So this year, Tomac's not had any of those implosions, you know, past Supercross seasons anyway, where he's had those rounds where just nothing goes right and he kind of gives up on himself. You know, I'll play devil's advocate. I think he's a little mentally stronger in Supercross this year than he was in years past. I agree with what you said, Roczen closing down on him and give him another lap. We would have had a battle right to the finish line. But I don't see Tomac doing those things he's done in years past where it's really affected him if he's had a tip over and it takes him 30 seconds to get up. You don't see that this year. You know, he just seems to be a little more in tune with himself.
And not yet.
Not yet. You got, seven rounds left in the series. So it's going to come down to the wire. And I said this before, it's nobody who started their seventh season has gone on to win the championship who hadn't previously won it. So you got two guys in that same scenario that have a chance to win it this year. And I think they're far and above everybody else. Webb's in there, but he's just had some bad luck.
Yeah, speaking of Webb, I don't know how much they showed on TV, but he rode a really good race. I think he finished third, but yeah. He killed it. He was doing great. I wasn't exceptionally stoked on my guy, Justin Brayton. He rode around in 10th, 11th place. And I don't think they showed it on TV, but I didn't even see it until a video of it last night from Trey Kennard took this video. I think it was Trey or something, but it was on Duff's phone. Last corner by the start there on the last lap, Vince got out of control and, he didn't mean to, but he crashed into Brayton and broke top of Brayton's hand. So Brayton ran across the finish line, rode straight to the medic's truck. 30 minutes later, he comes out with a cast on his hand. He's had a cast and he's racing this weekend, he said. So he's incredibly tough rider, and but that's what happens when you ride around in 10th, 11th place, that you can't avoid stupid shit like that, because that's what happens in 10th place.
You know, the guy that really impressed me this weekend that's really kind of hadn't shown up all year is Plessinger. You know, he had a great start, was battling with those guys, and he finished.
Yes, he looked awesome.
He finished up sixth, and he's really not been anywhere near, he hasn't sniffed the front of the pack hardly at all yet. So it's
right.
Good.
And his heat race was killer. But you know what? He's an off-road guy. He was I think they called him the Grand Marshal or whatever of the GNCC yesterday. We went and rode up to that and watched. He was there. We got to hang out with him for a little bit. Caleb Russell. So this is his last year. He's, he's the factory KTM guy. He's announced he's going to ride off into the sunset. And I imagine he'll be some sort of a trainer or something, stay involved after his retirement. But, I kind of thought when he made that announcement, I kind of thought maybe he would just, maybe call it in one last year, the last season. He beat him by over 2 minutes. I mean, he straight whooped their butts.
He is a competitor, and man. He
was not winded.
Down. Yep.
His face wasn't dirty. It was like, holy cow, he's a different animal than the rest of them guys. And a guy like Josh Strang, who's running around, he got third. That's a really good day for him yesterday, especially in the Florida sand and stuff. All of a sudden, he's relevant again if Caleb's gone. I mean, like for a championship.
Yeah, I mean, that's two events in a row where he's pulled a third and he's looked competitive. You got the Duvall out and, those guys not being there. So, it certainly helps him. But, yeah, Russell's just a freak. I mean, he off-road, he's just got it so dialed after all these years. I got to wonder what he's going to do next, after GNCC, what's he going to do? Is he going to try other disciplines? Is he going to be like Sipes, who, by the way, I think he got 16th in the Supercross.
Did you see his front number plate in his heat race?
No. Oh, yeah, that's right. It had a picture of somebody on there. That's right. I did see that.
My face sticker that I slap everywhere. I put it on his front fender, and I took pictures of it, and I'm laughing.
I saw it online. That's right. So, yeah.
I got to tear it off, and his dad's like, leave it. He probably won't notice. See, so I'm going out and races half the night with my – I'm surprised AMA didn't yank it off.
Make sure you get one of those on his flat track bike for this weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to see the Tony on there. All right. And then we also have some MX2 results. Tom Vial from France won that class. It was kind of a replay of the previous weekend. Renault from France got second, and Iago Gertz in third from Belgium. So that series is kind of going strong. And as I said before, Thomas Kier Olsen has not shown up. He's had some injuries, I guess, so he's kind of struggled away. So that's it for off-road and motocross racing. Move into the Pit Pass Trivia Question of the Week. Definitely keyed to our event coming up this weekend, the Daytona 200. Daytona 200 has been won by a father and then his son. Who were they in what years?
One of our perennial favorites, one Danny Eslick, crazy fast guy and multiple Daytona 200 winner. As we're leading up to the Daytona, Danny, thanks again for joining us. What's your plan for this year? You got a somewhat of a new setup going in, so tell us about her.
Just looking forward to being back in the Daytona 200. We had a little bit of bad luck last year and just wanting to rebound and come back strong. And this year's got a pretty deep field in the 200, so looking forward to just having a big race at Daytona this year.
And who are you riding with and for? Let's start there because, as we know, the Daytona 200 is a once-a-year, essentially a one-off race. It's not part of a greater series. So things for this race aren't exactly like the rest of our national road racing season. Who are you riding with?
Doing it with Michelle Lindsay again, the TOBC Racing Bunch. It's really come together last minute, as it kind of has over the past years, but this one even more so than in the past, with Michelle having pancreatic cancer and having some issues there with having to take care of her health problems, and racing was definitely put on the back burner. She's kind of stepped away from the racing full time as it is, but we've continued to do the 200, and everything just really, the ball started rolling. Palm Beach Police Department jumped on board again, and Politas Medavina from Daytona Beach there, and then I had Tulsa Power Sports here out of Tulsa that stepped on board, and just the ball really started rolling, and we ended up coming up with a bike and crew, and here we are last minute headed to Daytona.
Yeah, Danny, and you're not the only one to say this. In the previous weeks, we've been talking to fellow competitors of yours that are on their way to Daytona. A lot of last-minute plans came together. The entry list continues to tell that story as people add to the list. So you're not alone in that. And clearly, I would say you're still arguably a favorite, given the number, your experience at Daytona and the team that you're on. TOBC, no joke, has been there a lot. They know how to win, as clearly do you. Do you feel like you're still one of the heavy favorites? Because arguably you are.
I'd hope so. I know I've got a crew behind me that knows what they're doing. Everybody that's going to be on board has done it in the past, either with myself or with another rider. So the experience is all there. It comes down to the luck of Daytona. Sometimes it's good to you and sometimes it's bad. So hopefully it'll be good to me this year.
And this race really has, I've always thought, kind of played to veteran riders. History shows that. There have been a couple of instances where a young, newer rider has pulled something out of their hat. But, I mean, would you agree, Danny, this race always seems to favor guys who've got a little experience under their belt, arguably, a veteran racer?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I'd say my very first Daytona 200 was one of my best ones until I won. I mean, my first one I got fourth in like 2005 or something like that. And then I didn't do any good there until, basically till I won. So, it was a long road coming to the first win, and then to stack a few more up back to back on top of it. It was, it all happened real quick. But yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's Daytona's the only race like it really, in the States for us, and with the banking, and the only one like it in the world. So it's with the pit stops and the strategy and that kind of stuff, it's definitely tougher for a young rider that hasn't done a lot of endurance racing and stuff like that to shine in it.
Danny, you said this deal comes together last minute. Have you got other plans? I mean, you're also a notoriously fast and capable flat track racer, so we see you in our National Flat Track Series on a pretty recurring basis. Do you have solid plans for this season in that series, or have you got a day job, sadly?
I do have plans, but McGrain Racing stepped up, and they've got a couple of Kawasaki's I'm going to race in the production twins class with AFT. And, you know, with Moto America stuff, there's just not much for rides or anything like that out there. And, you know, I've always stuck to my roots with the flat track and you know, never steered too far away from it. So it's good to be able to get back out and do that. You know, it used to just be when I wasn't road racing, but now it looks like it's going to be a bit more of a full-time gig doing the flat track stuff.
Yeah, and that class that you're talking about, the production twin class, is they're putting some new focus on it. I think that's a good thing. It's just opening up the paddock, right? There's more potential seats for high-caliber riders to get out and showcase their sponsors and their own riding talents. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I do too. I think what they're doing with the other class is stupid, and it kind of sucks. I don't see the light in that one, but that's just personal opinion of mine. But, I mean, it is good for the production deal. I mean, the production class is kind of going to be one of the ones to watch now. There's going to be a lot of talent in there.
So you specifically referenced the Super Twins, you mean, Danny?
Yeah, that's okay. What that would be it. Whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, Super Twins versus production, which is, you know, it makes sense. It's an affordable way to get into the series, which, you know, certainly should help pump up the paddock a little bit.
Right, yep.
And what were you doing, Danny? Have you had to succumb to the unfortunate reality of a real job, or have you managed to put that off entirely?
Oh, I'd keep that put on the side burner. We don't want to mess with that now.
you have managed to secure yourself a real job, one might call it.
I stay away from that. I stick to racing motorcycles. It's sometimes it makes for a long winter, but Daytona can't get here quick enough.
Yeah, so your arm's feeling a little light. How many watches do you have already? And I know they've changed it a little bit, right? Is it now only the winner gets the watch, or are they doing one for qualifying too?
Right. Yeah. No, I got the last one when they gave it away for pole. 2010, I think it was, and then I got the first one, I believe it was for pole when they gave it away for the race win. So now it's just for the win.
Gotcha. So you don't need a day job. You've got enough of those. You could mortgage those bad boys. They're worth a pretty penny. Those Daytona Rolexes are that's money in the bank, as they say.
Right. Yep.
They should make you wear the watches during the race. As you gain them, then you just get heavier and heavier every Daytona right? race.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have to split them up, two on each arm.
That's a handicap system right there. So are you, and I'm sorry, I don't know enough about the schedule. So you probably, you don't get to run Daytona flat track because that is only the other classes, or are they running the production twin class at Daytona?
Yeah, no production twins at Daytona.
And are there any other AFT stops where that class is omitted, or is it everywhere but Daytona?
To be honest with you, I haven't even really looked at the full schedule, so I don't know. I just go race to race, so
gotcha.
I'm not sure what it is, but whatever ones that they run at, which I think is most all of them. I don't think they're doing the TTs though, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed would be the TTs would probably be the ones you'd just pull back that class from, but that's absolutely fine. There's a lot of talent going into that class this year. Who are you looking to be your prime time competitor, or have you even gone looking that far? Is it all about the bike and the team right now?
I haven't even really ridden a bike. I got a few laps on them at Springfield Labor Day weekend, but we had some bike problems and didn't really get any good quality laps. So seat time wise, I've never ridden the motorcycles yet, and we're definitely gonna have a little bit of a learning curve ahead of us. So you know, but there's a lot of guys in it. There's a stacked field of people in that production class. So, I mean, it could be anybody. You really never know.
It's going to make for some really good racing. Again, I don't think what you're describing, Danny, is abnormal, much like the last-minute plans at Daytona. I think there's a lot of teams that are relatively last-minute committing to this the class and this season with AFT. But, again, I think it's going to make for some killer racing. What's been the most memorable for you this past year? If we don't talk about last year's Daytona, yeah, you had a little bit of bad luck. What else did you really enjoy doing this past racing season?
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot. I went did a Moto America round, or did two, did Road America, which is always one of my favorite rounds to go to, and did okay. Was riding a Kawasaki there and got around pretty good on it for never really throwing a leg over the ZX6, and then got to ride Altus Motorsports 600 from at Moto America at Pittsburgh, and it was a lot of fun to just be back out there and just see the familiar faces and, you know, everybody that I've been traveling around the country with for the last almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's been you've had a great career, and it certainly doesn't look like you're anywhere near done, Danny, which is great news for all of us race fans who hold you in such high regard. There's a lot of, this is what we do on a weekly basis, is talk to professional racers, and man, there's a lot of guys that are on the bench that just, it's startling. I really hope that, we see a turnaround in what's our favorite chosen sport, motorsport, any of the forms of motorcycle racing.
Absolutely. Like you said, there's a lot of talent sitting on the sidelines just because, there's not a lot of opportunity, a lot of rides out there, and it's tough on everybody. So, maybe things will turn around and some seats will start opening up.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think, going back in your history, Danny, you had you were on the Jordan team. Now, what would it take to get somebody like that back into road racing? We're always talking about guys on the bench. There's not enough teams to go around for the riders. How does the sport bring people like another Michael Jordan back into it to kind of pump the series up?
Shoot, I have no idea on something like that. It's that one's above my pay grade. I'm just the monkey that gets on there and rides. And that's exactly what it needs. We lost every year for just the last several years. It's you lose a team here, you lose a team there.
It adds up.
And it's down to down to just two or three semis, a handful of semis in the whole paddock is. You see it over the last couple of years, it just kind of gone downhill, and it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and it's not unique to road racing. It's the one that hits me the most. But Danny, we're going to wish and hope that this year goes better for all involved. Most of all, you've got the upcoming Daytona 200 just this coming Saturday. So best of luck to you. We want to give you a chance to thank anybody you might want to thank as far as sponsors and supporters along the way.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on. And, obviously Michelle Lindsay and TOBC Racing for always sticking with me and having my back, and just everybody involved with our program, all the fans, and, hope everybody makes it out to Daytona, because it looks like it's going to be good weather, and we know it'll be some damn good racing.
It definitely will. Be looking for our men in the stands there. Tommy Boy Halverson, who you know well, Danny, and Tony Wink, both representing Pit Pass. They'll be down to your pits. I'm sure you'll be seeing them. They'll be coming to say hey to you.
Awesome. We'll look forward to seeing them.
Well, thanks for joining us, Danny, and best of luck this weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. Hopefully you get a good run out of her.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
This week's trivia question of the week on Pit Pass was, the Daytona 200 has been won by a father, then his son. Who were they and when? And the answer, of course, is Floyd MD, who won in 1948, then his son, the great Don MD, won in 1972. Don MD is also a very well-known motorcycle journalist in the industry, amongst other things. I bet you have a bunch of stories about one of those MD guys, don't you?
I do. Dave. I always like, Dave likes the story behind the story. And, Don was, he's from that era where when you raced motorcycles, you raced every possible discipline, right? Flat track, off-road, road racing.
Hill climb,
you name it, they did it all, right? And he was on one of the biggest road race teams in 1970. This is the year before, 1971, the year before he won Daytona. He was on probably one of the biggest road racing team efforts ever, which was the BSA Triumph teams. Which
absolutely,
when you look at the list of names on those teams, it's
Gene Romero.
Oh, it's absolutely stellar. The names of the riders.
It's the who's who of motorcycle history.
You had Gary Nixon, Mike Hailwood, Dave Aldana. I mean, including
Dick Bugsy Mann. Yeah,
that's everybody. Right. Dick Mann was on the team. So you don't get any bigger back then. And then the year later, Don's without a ride, and he gets a privateer Yamaha together and builds a race team, and he's riding a two-stroke 350 and goes out and wins the race. Steady Eddie just works his way up front, and by the last three laps, he was in the lead and wins it. And, it, you know, as it turns out, that was Yamaha's first win of the Daytona Series.
And it really marked the beginning of the two-stroke era, if you will, in road racing. Small displacement two-strokes were quickly displacing four-strokes.
Yeah, and some of those bikes back then, they were, you know, that led into the era with Kenny Roberts and, you know, Freddie Spencer after that. And, you know, it kind of also put more of the U.S. riders on the map in road racing, where they really started to make their mark. And the Superbike series started in the late 70s, and it all kind of took off from there.
It was an interesting time, and it's, it's fun to look back at that era, because you're right, it's 71, 72. It's easy to imagine a young Kenny Roberts was probably watching that race from home while winning a whole bunch of races at places like Ascot and up and down the West Coast, flat tracking.
Yeah, and again, exactly, there's another rider that did all the disciplines, which is, you know, watch the movie on any Sunday, and you get the vibe where anybody who rode a motorcycle back then pretty much did it all. Rode every possible type and competed at every level. Don was one of those stories, and Don's gone on to be a published author. He's an AMA inductee, just one of those guys that, you know, he's done it all, and he's still in the industry, still writing some of the greatest motorcycle books. If you get a chance, check them out online. And really, to meet him in person, he's just one of the nicest people. He's down to earth, talks to anybody. He does a lot of work with companies like Parts Unlimited, writing a lot of their copy for their monthly and quarterly print media. So he's still deeply involved in the industry.
Yeah, and it's impossible to... So I've never met him personally, but having been grown up in this motorcycle addiction, if you will, reading magazines, impossible to think of a famous motorcycle picture when someone wins a historic race in the United States and a fair bit abroad, if they were from the U.S., Don MD always ends up in that picture. There are so many pictures of Don MD standing next to Kenny Roberts or Gene Romero, or, you know, pick someone through the 70s and 80s winning a race, and Don MD was quite often standing there.
So he's the Bill Murray of motorcycle racing.
Yeah, that is a fair comparison, and it just strikes me that, you know, I've seen his name in print so many times because his name's always referenced in the description below the picture. Oh, this is so and so standing with Don MD.
Yep, and the industry's lucky to have him because he's just a wealth of knowledge and just a really great motorcyclist and great guy. All right, coming up next on Pit Pass Moto, we've got legendary racer and trainer to the stars. This guy's pretty much done everything in motocross and off-road, Gary Semix. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
So just looking down your list of achievements, it's stellar. 1974 500cc Supercross champion. Now, we don't have that anymore, but you were one of the early pioneers in Supercross racing leading into your career of racing. Going back then, who in that era was your biggest competitor?
Of American riders, at that time, it was Brad Lackey, Jimmy Winert. Those two really stick out. Oh, Marty Smith, Danny Laporte, Galen Mosier, Rich Eierstedt. I mean, you know, there was a lot of guys at that time even that were very competitive.
Yeah, that's a long list of, you know, famous and fast racers for sure. Now, I don't know when the AMA discontinued the 500cc class, but obviously Supercross evolved into what it is, 250cc two-strokes, and eventually I think in the 80s they added the 125cc two-strokes, and then you raced all the way into the 80s, if I recall.
Yeah, in America all the way through 81, and then for 82, 83, and 84 I went to Europe and raced the GP series.
Oh, okay, and what class did you race in?
Well, when I first went over there, I raced the 500 class for 2 years, and then the third year, I raced the 250 class.
So a lot of those names you mentioned early on in Supercross, you were racing against when you went to Europe, guys like Lackey and
Yeah, Lackey was still there, Danny Laporte, but he was racing the 250 class when I was racing the 500 class.
Oh, that's right.
Marty Motes was over there for a while.
And so that begs the question, I would say, how was the GP as far as competitiveness in the early 80s compared to Supercross at the time? Because, you know, clearly that was the home of motocross type racing, and it was well before Supercross became the de facto World Series of motocross.
Yeah, that's very accurate. Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, it was very competitive. It was a whole different type of track, really. Their tracks were very fast and rough. They got rough, choppy, bumpy, rough type stuff. And then they had sand races that were super, super rough. 40-minute motos plus two laps, which was the same as in America at that time. Where in America, you know, it's still that way today. When Villopoto first went over there a few years ago, he didn't know how to set up his bike, and that was one of the things that really hurt him. Americans, probably because of Supercross, they get used to stiffer suspension. But I found out when I went over there that, oh man, that didn't work over there, not on those tracks. And I was fortunate enough to work with Olean's at first, and then White Power suspension, and, you know, got it dialed in. But yeah, it was a lot softer suspension that would actually move through the bumps.
Yeah, it seems like you see it less often where U.S. riders are able to go over to Europe and assimilate and merge into the series and do well. There's always exceptions to that, but it seems like to me, Gary, back in your area, there were more guys that were able to do it than today. Or maybe less guys try to do it. That might be the case. But in Villopoto's example, but you know, I always wonder why that is. Is it strictly the tracks, or is it everything else that comes with going to Europe?
Oh, it's a big part of it's a track, but another big different types of tracks. But another big part of it is the culture over there. And you know, some Americans go over there and they can't adapt to living over there with so many different cultures and countries and all that stuff. But when I first went over, I was fortunate to have some people that I knew that got me in contact with the right people, hired a good mechanic. And his brother worked for Graham Noyce. And at that time, well, in 79, Noyce won the world championship in 500 class. So he was still a top rider in 82 when I first went over. And I got hooked up with them, and they really, really helped me a lot. I mean, without them, it would have been nearly impossible to do what I did over there. So the culture is big difference. And I don't know, being from Ohio and knowing those guys, I really liked it. I fit right in.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, your success definitely shows that. You know, you've had great success over the years racing.
Thank you.
I have a personal story. I remember lining up at the racetrack. We went to Ohio International. I had just turned 40 years old. And I'm thinking, I'm a young guy coming into the class. And I line up plus 40 gate at OIR. And the Suzuki pulls up next to me. And, you know, gate drops, we all go. And that Suzuki just cleaned house. Well, that Suzuki was you. So that was my one personal involvement racing against you, Gary. I just remember you were the guy who just destroyed the class that day, and you continued to do it.
Thank you. Yeah, that was about the time I moved back to Ohio from living in California for like 12 or 14 years. And I couldn't stop racing. So, you know, I was racing the local scene in Ohio.
Yeah, and that was actually a really good era for that particular track. I think that's when the Hand family was operating it, and they really had one of the best racing facilities, I think, in maybe in Northeast Ohio, maybe even Ohio at the time.
Yeah, it was very good when the Hands had it. And now a different owner has it, and he has open practices there. And it's one of the best tracks around in Northeastern Ohio that I know of.
And it's good to see. That track's got just a tremendous history. You know, they used, mm-hmm. well, you know this, they had motocross nationals back there in the 70s.
Yeah, in 75, they had a motocross national. And when I was just a kid, just starting to get in the race, and I must have been 15 years old, I remember that track and going there and racing. They had this, the reason I really remember it, it stands out. It had a really neat step-up jump that back in those days weren't very, it wasn't very common.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes way back, man.
Gary, it was mentioned, clearly your work in this, the sport and industry have not come close to ending. Who are you working with right now? I mean, are there riders that, that our listeners might be, surprised or not surprised that you're mentoring, tutoring, and coaching?
Well, the two guys that stick out in my mind is Luke Fosner, who's a Orange Brigade rider. He's just starting to ride 85s now. He's won some championships at Loretta's and just is a super fast kid. And the other rider is Gavin Towers, who just got a Team Green ride with Kawasaki, and he's also super fast. And my stepson, actually, who's one of my certified instructors, started working with them. And now every summer, you know, they come and prepare at my track and then go to Loretta's. And as far as other guys like top name pro riders that you've heard of, everybody's heard of, is I don't really work with them anymore because ever since I got my own track in Ohio, I've kind of been a prisoner to that track. I mean, it takes so much mm-hmm. work and track maintenance to keep it good, you know, and for our schools that we do there.
So, and going back through the history, you've trained some of the top racers in the sport. When you talk about the Jeremy McGraths and the Ryan Villopotos, how did that come about for you? I mean, was that a deal where they approached you because they knew of your schooling or your school that you had going, or did you approach them?
Well, with Jeremy McGrath, it was a connection through a guy that freelanced for Cycle News, and he advised me to get a hold of Jeremy and do a lesson, private lesson for him, because he looked like he had really good potential. And I followed up on that tip, contacted Jeremy's parents because he was only 16, and I went out and did a private lesson with him, and, you know, we kind of hit it off and stayed in contact, kept working together, and you know what happened.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's and word of mouth is probably some of the best advertising you can have.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And when I look at your website, Gary, it's just loaded with content. I mean, you are the 800-pound gorilla of content for training videos. There, I think I counted 39 different videos on there the other day, that, and then you also have the downloadable side. I mean, that's just outstanding that anybody in the world can go on there and pull down training for whatever part of the discipline they want to train on. How do you choose how you want to break it up, whether it's, you know, I'm going to do a video focused on body position, or I'm going to do a video focused on, you know, corners? How do you decide to do that?
Well, it's from the experience that I have through doing so many motocross schools and teaching so many different riders at different skill levels and understanding how to teach them, how to communicate with them, how to break the techniques down so they're able to understand them and be able to do them. And then, you know, I have a motocross practice manual that consists of what I call the 55 absolute techniques of motocross. And I need to update that because since then I've been finding more. But then when you break down the parts of those 55 absolute techniques of motocross, you know, you come up with really hundreds of techniques and ways to improve and practice them. And that's how I, you know, make all the content in my videos. And you mentioned 39 videos. That's what I have available on DVD. But for my streaming subscribers and downloaders, there is a total of 80 technique and training videos. So, yeah, I mean, I like doing it. And I get so many good feedback, comments, and things like that from people that thank me for it and how it's helped them and improved. And I just feel that's my part of helping this motocross industry continue to exist. I mean, I want it to grow and get better and stronger, but You know, it's way, way behind the eight ball of what it was in the early 70s. And people that didn't live through that era don't understand, man. I mean, everybody had a dirt bike and were riding dirt bikes. And there were so many places to ride and they were affordable. And, you know, the sport grew so fast. And now I feel that it's been going the other direction. And I pretty much understand why, too.
What do you think's the biggest contribution to it kind of going the other way? Because we have this discussion on the podcast all the time, which is, you know, what's the future look like? Where are the next riders coming from? You know, what are your thoughts on that, Gary?
Well, it's coming from the cost of bikes, the cost of and technology and maintenance, and the places to ride. And I don't know if the industry really understands, coming from Southern California, where you have a lot of top-level riders, the average guy out there that's purchasing, you know, equipment and motorcycles and all that stuff, their skill level, I'd say on average, is about a C-class level. Mm-hmm. They just want to go out and have a good time riding their dirt bike. You know, they don't have they already have a full-time job or they're in school or whatever. And they just want to have fun. You know they're not going to be a motocross champion or anything, but they love to ride and they want to have a good time. And I don't think that the industry is catering to these people. They're making it more of a, you got to have a rich family to get into it and do decent at it. I mean, you can produce new race machines every year for the people that want those, but why not continue to manufacture older models that guys can have fun on, that are so much less expensive and easier to maintain and, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I think that's the conundrum the industry seems to be in, which is, we want to offer the greatest technology, but how do you do that at an affordable price? And when the sport goes from blue collar to white collar, you're bound to lose participants in some way. So how do you draw in the blue collar guys? How do you offer that seemingly not equal, but maybe almost as good as vehicle? That's maybe it's an older model two stroke or whatever at a fairer price. We've all had that same conversation around the table, which is, if Suzuki would re-release the RM series motorcycles at 2003 prices, they might have some success selling them.
Absolutely. You know, because I go to quite a few open practices, and there's guys out there that are below C-class level or C-class level. There's the majority of guys. And they're not really going to benefit from the top technology, you know, a $9,000 four-stroke. They can ride just as fast on a 05 RM250. It's a lot less expensive, less maintenance, and more people could get into the sport. And if we had more and better open practice tracks, so they can go there and ride as much as they want and leave, you know, where if you go to a racetrack, you got to be there for sign up, you know, at 7:30 in the morning, and it's sometimes during the summer, you might not get out of there till 7 o'clock at night. Who has time to go do that on the weekend and ride four laps per moto?
Yeah. And I tend to agree. We've talked about that also, which is value for your money, and practice tracks are really, that's why they pack them in on the weekends, because the cost is lower, yet the seat time is much, you can ride unlimited amount of time, really.
Yeah,
and that's kind of why we think the off-road series are growing more, because it's the same formula. You spend less money, you get more bike time, and like you said, you don't need the high-technology vehicle to have just as much fun. And it's a question for the industry collective, and I don't know if there's an answer coming yet, but you know, we like to think that eventually it'll come around to, you know, the pendulum is swinging maybe back towards lower cost vehicles eventually, to where everybody could get back into the sport. And it'll be great for all of us, because, the heydays are long over, and we need it to pump the sport up again.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, and to have these track promoters that are having open practices or racing, I don't know. It would be good if the AMA got involved, and anybody that especially goes to a race needs to go through some type of motocross school training. I just saw an accident yesterday when I was in an open practice. There was a 65 rider out there on the track with everybody, big bikes and everything. He's going super slow. There's one long big table. There's a lot of tabletops up there, and he crossed over on the tabletop towards the landing, didn't know to stay in his line. Sure enough, he got hit by a big bike.
And, yeah.
You know, it was ugly.
And that's a bad formula for anybody, and we always try to ride safe when we're out there and look out for the grommets going around the track. To your point, I think you grew up through the area, came up through the area where they had high school motocross. Do you remember that in the 70s?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, but I don't know if they had that in Ohio. I know they not. Well, I know they didn't have it in Ohio, but I don't know how much of that they had, but I know they had it in Southern California.
I'd love to be at the sales pitch meeting when they go to the school board and say, here's what we want to do, and see how that goes.
Yeah, I don't think that would fly in most places.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Gary, what we want to do is we want to, unfortunately, our time's running out here, so we always like to take the last few moments for you to thank any sponsors that you have in your program and talk about those people.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Factory Connection has been a big help to me, helping me get the right suspension settings. Maxima has always backed me. Fox Racing with their gear, Renthal handlebars. Dunlop Tires has been a good sponsor. And, man, their technology in tires is amazing. They keep making them better every 6 months or so, you know. Let's see. There's a few other ones. But I'm not used to getting on a podium and naming them all out.
That's
<you know>?
Okay. No pressure at all. We just we're glad to have you on here and talk about, you know, the history of the sport and your contributions and all the great things you're doing to train riders. You know, it's outstanding. We're really, really happy to have you on here, and you're welcome back anytime, Gary.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, anybody that wants to get on my website, just go to GarySemix.com. It's my name, GarySemix.com, and you can find everything from there. We do group classes, private lessons. I have certified instructors in 6 different countries, and, of course, all the technique, DVDs and training and streaming platform, so... It's all there, and I appreciate all the support from my sponsors and customers and, you know, trying to keep the dream alive.
All right, upcoming this weekend in the racing world, we've got, of course, the Daytona 200 this Saturday. That will be Central Time, 11 a.m., followed very quickly thereafter, 3 p.m. Central Time, that is, with the AFT race from the very same racetrack there in Daytona. We've also got Jerez World Superbike scheduled later in the month. That is March 27 through 29. That is scheduled, assuming we don't have any more coronavirus-related interruptions to the racing that is scheduled. And unfortunately, yes, there was a MotoGP race that has now been moved to later in the year. Result being the next MotoGP race on the calendar will be here in good old USA. The GP at COTA, along with our Moto America series, will be racing with them that weekend at COTA. What do we got in the off-road world, Dave?
Oh, we got all kinds of racing coming up. We've got March 14th, we've got return to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. That's Saturday night. And also the GNCC is this weekend in Washington, Georgia. It's the General at Aonia Pass. The last one I got to report here is the MXGP in Argentina is coming up on the 22nd. So far, no cancellations that I can tell.
Right on. Well, hopefully it doesn't impact other series like it has. Sadly, World Superbike and MotoGP both. I fear there may be more complications. We'll see. I wanted to share with you, Dave, and our listeners, that I found out how to watch the Daytona 200 live this coming weekend. It's available on the internet. If you go to NBC Sports Gold, they have a thing called Track Pass. If you go there, you will find that they have one that pertains to AFT, our American Flat Track Series. DMG owns that NBC Sports, or is being broadcast there. So you have NASCAR options as well as AFT. For the low, low sum of $1.99, I was able to purchase one month of AFT coverage, and the Daytona 200 is lumped in with that track pass package for my 30 days. So I'm going to watch some flat tracking for the next month. Again, very reasonable price,
I would say.
So I'm going to be able to watch it live. I'll be in Arizona at a Cubs game, probably watching surreptitiously, watching the Daytona 200 from a Cubs preseason game this Saturday.
As we do, we sneak off to our phone and see what else is going on, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll be catching the AFT that afternoon as well, both of them. I'm excited to get to watch both of those live.
Well, there you go, full access and even at a fair price. That's a bargain at twice the price, I think.
Yeah, and it took a little work to find that, thanks to the very knowledgeable people on the WERA forum, WERA being the road race, National Amateur Road Racing Series. Big kudos to the brain trust that is all the members there. They tend to get to the bottom of any motorcycle related problem very quickly. Huge wealth of knowledge, and it was quickly determined from my perusing of that forum how exactly I might watch the race. So thank you again to those guys. We want to thank again our guests today, and you personally, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you enjoyed this episode of Pit Pass, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, where you'll get alerts when new episodes are uploaded. That happens on Thursdays, as we know. And of course, make sure you're also following us on Twitter and Facebook and pitpassmoto.com. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tony Wank for joining us on the news, contributor Tommy Boy Halverson and Ed Kuhlenkamp, social media contributor Chris Bishop, our producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineers Sean Rule Hoffman and Eric Coltnow. I'm PJ.
And I'm Dave.
We'll see you next week on Pit Pass.
Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry. Evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.